Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And thank you, everybody, for being with us today. What's almost a snow-free Sunday here in the Charlottesville Albemarle area? Don't get too excited, because check your weather forecast. Tuesday, but maybe our man, our guest, our friend Pat Calvert can tell us what's going on, because Pat, being a representative of the James River Association, he's the Upper River Keeper. That's a big river. Upper River Keeper. Upper River Keeper for James River. That's a lot. That's a lot of river to keep up. Get a lot closer to that.
Yeah, technically, it's the Upper and Middle James River Keeper, but that's far too long a title.
And from Richmond, Northwest?
The 14th Street Bridge, the Mayo Island Bridge in Richmond, all the way upstream to the headwaters that actually a couple of them go into West Virginia, pretty much the West Virginia-Virginia line.
So is that why you're so fit, because you have to walk that every day?
No, I swim it. And that's why.
Is that why you have a cold?
Yeah, that's why I have a cold.
Because you've been swimming it.
Yeah, sorry, I'm a little stuffy from all that exposure.
Oh, I live stuffy. Don't worry about it. I think the fact that the listeners can hear your stuffiness as opposed to just mine will probably be a treat.
Okay, great.
So Pat Calvert here again from the James River Association. We're going to be talking about the James River, the state of the James River. For those of you wondering why in the world I'm doing two back-to-back shows on the environment, well, because that's important for those of us who listen to 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. That's one of the things that we're progressive about, is making sure that the environment can be safely passed along to the upcoming generations.
Exactly, and then some.
And then
seventh generation, right?
Yeah. And because last week with the SELC, we touched on the BREMO power plant and the coal ash release that will be coming from there. And Pat Calvert has been heavily involved in that topic. So we're going to get into that in a little bit as well.
Coal ash wastewater.
Coal ash.
Not coal ash discharge. We'll talk about that. I just want to clarify that.
There's a difference between flushing it down the toilet and letting it out through a hose into the river?
With a filter in between.
With a filter in between. All right. So we will be getting into that. So take care. Sit down. Stretch out your muscles. Get comfy while we talk to Pat. So let's start. James River Association, a nonprofit organization.
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit, charitable you can make a charitable contribution to us, and it's tax exempt. We've been around since 1976, formed out of the Richmond area, and really were focused there for many years. About a decade ago, started really looking upstream and downstream, realizing that water's coming from somewhere. So 5 years ago, I took the position with JRA, and the goal was to set up an office on the James, and so we set one up right in another James city, Lynchburg, and another one in Williamsburg. So we've got an upper and a lower James River Keeper, but we have many other staff that I rely on every day to make us effective. We're not just a couple of river keepers running around, but we're also education staff who take students out on the rivers, on the James and their local bodies of water every day. We've got watershed restoration staff that are working right here in Charlottesville with walkable watersheds and trying to engage communities and restoring their local creeks and streams and getting to know them and love them, take care of them. And our advocacy team, which is largely Adrian Catula, who's pounding the floors of General Assembly every day of late. And then we have our community conservationists that are working with our local communities to engage them.
JRAVA.org. You can check it out. So, State of the James River. What does it look like? You had goals for 2015, I'm sure.
Well, we always have a goal, a consistent goal, and that is to restore the James to what we consider to be healthy and achievable. So rather than just sort of saying we want a healthy James and, you know, when we reach that, we'll let you know. That's not a very, you know, that's a great fundraising tactic for in perpetuity, but that's not our goal. It's actually to protect the James. All of us would like to not have a job because we would have a fully engaged river constituency that acts on behalf of the river, and we know that we'll always have a safeguarded, healthy river. I'd love to be out of a job, find something else to do, and not have to worry about necessarily or concern myself with having to protect the river because we all do it. But we've got to have goals to set and ways to a plan to meet those goals, and then we have to measure ourselves. So we do that biannually. We measured it again at the end of 2015 and the several months prior to that, collecting data to compare it to prior years. And we were very happy that we got a B for the first time in decades. It had been held at a C for many years. So we're really, really happy that we've got a B. And just like when you're in school, you got a B. That's not bad.
But your parents are never happy with that.
They're never. Yeah.
So the people who work for James River Association, you're pleased, but you know that there's room for improvement.
Well, that's what we've been saying with the sea. That's what we've been saying with the sea. But now we've got evidence that it can happen. We're not just hanging on to a sea for years and years. So it's I think it's even better. It's more encouraging to us. It shows that what we're doing is working. And where we've seen the improvements is tremendous. Where we're continuing to not see improvements means that we need to place more effort into those categories.
All right. So, again, Pat Calvert from the James River Association, he's the upper river keeper for the James River. So would you say 14th Street Bridge in Richmond?
Right.
And west.
And west, and all the tributaries included. So it's several thousand miles of river, but and creeks and streams. But I rely on many, many volunteers to keep an eye out.
So goals for 2015, everything or many parts of it improved. You got your first B as an overall grade. I want to know the best area that improved and something that you were like, oh my gosh, really? We're still doing poorly in that area?
Well, if people want to look at it, we did it in a different format this year. Rather than putting out a big, thick bunch of glossy paper with some somewhat not terribly engaging words and lots of
that
words.
Difficult to read PDF file.
Right. So instead, we went online. We worked with a great organization of people that are far better at engaging people visually. And able to save us a lot of money in printing costs and save a lot of trees in the process. You can just Google search State of the James, and you can see a really interactive, pretty. You were even telling me this earlier. This
yeah,
sort of eye candy.
The graphics on it is really cool.
Right.
I mean, I'm assuming that it's not completely. Cartologist? It's
not, cartoonish?
Cartoonish. It does have a little cartoonish look, but it's not perfect in terms of map accuracy.
No, I wouldn't go driving by.
Don't go hiking along, make your marks along the map for hiking. But it was really cool in terms of how it grabbed you to look at and highlighted certain areas with their little circles saying, you know, and I can't even think of them now because I'm overwhelmed with the memory in my head, but certain species and what percentage of them you were in reaching your goal for fish or for or problem areas such as farm runoff and things like that.
Right. Yeah, we've measured them out. I mean, right at the top of the list is bald eagles, which when I was a kid, bald eagles were there were no breeding pairs of bald eagles left in the entire James River watershed. Zero. And now we're well over 100% of our goal on that. And that was due to one piece of legislation, essentially the Endangered Species Act, which said, you know, you can't be pumping out toxic chemicals that are going to endanger this species, or you can't endanger the species any further. Got to protect it. And that led to the ban on DDT in this country and its application, because it was being used everywhere. But that saved the species, and now we're seeing huge rebounding of those.
My parents actually have a pair of bald eagle's nest in their yard.
Where are they?
Are not particularly completely accurate anymore. They had the nest. They live in Pocosin.
Okay.
So yeah. In the lower James River area, York River, James River.
Right.
And the nest has been there for about a decade, and now I think they moved over two or three yards and put their nest up on a neighbor's pine trees. But very cool. It's really nice. It's when you talk about things like this, and again, just for bald eagle, because it's everybody knows what it looks like, and in the history of it for people certainly over 30 is, oh, the endangered bald eagle. And to see one, and to see the time period when the female is feeding, you know, and you know that that's what's happening up there in the nest, and have a picture of when one of the eagles was in the yard, just like walking around in the yard for a short bit. It's phenomenal. And part of that comes from, that's the type of work that the James River Association is trying to do. I mean, one species of all the many plants and other wildlife and issues that go along with the James River, but it's phenomenal to see things like that and want to go, oh my gosh, how did that happen? And is there something I can help do?
Right, right. You know, bald eagles in this country are no longer endangered. So that's great. They're
which
on
doesn't mean you can start throwing toxic waste.
No, don't shoot them. It's still illegal to go after them. But we have other species that are what we call indicator species. So these are species that tell us a lot about their environments as a whole, and particularly about the James River. So bald eagles tend to return to where they're from and nest and are monogamous and will come back year after year after year. And I see new nests every year, and they're moving farther upstream, and they're right here in Charlottesville. They're right on the Ravana River. As soon as the Woolen Mills Dam came out in 2007 maybe, bald eagles started moving upstream because their forage species, their fish that they fed on, were now being able to move upstream above that dam. And I live right here in town, and I was looking up painting my house one day, and I saw a bald eagle circling around me down here in downtown Charlottesville. I thought,
does that make you feel nervous?
Well, it made me feel pretty cool, except I was standing on a ladder painting. So that made me feel nervous. Yes. It was really high in the air, but I thought, dang, that feels good to see something like that. So I believe that we can make a change. We've still got lots of other species like shad, the American shad, which Captain John Smith said you could walk across the James River when these fish were migrating from the oceans up to the rivers and creeks and streams to spawn every year.
Captain John Smith from Jamestown, Jamestown colony.
The original, yeah, Captain John Smith from Jamestown. And he said that you could walk across the James on the backs of these fish when they were migrating. And that lazy colonists would not even go down and catch one. They would just walk down to the river with a frying pan and scoop them right up into the pan. They were so thick. We've got a long way to go for those fish to come back. There are plenty of efforts have been going on for years to restore them. So we look at individual species like those, including the shad and others, but we all, and smallmouth bass, but we're also looking at their habitats. We're looking at the pollutants of most concern, and then we can't really leave ourselves out. We're part of this whole river system. So what are we doing as a society, as Virginians, to counteract the problems, to promote the solutions, and how well is it working?
So pick a problem. Yeah. So you talk about eagles and DDT.
Right.
DDT being an airborne toxin, being something that washes into the water, and so then it pollutes the fish, which pollute the eagles. How does that work?
Well, DDT is still produced in this country for other countries to potentially use, because it's a really effective pesticide. And where it's able to fight malaria and things like that, human disease, it's still permissible to be used, but it's not able to be used in this country anymore. We don't have big malaria problems yet. We'll see. How DDT worked was really, I think, captured best by Rachel Carson in The Silent Spring, which caused really an environmental change in this country, a whole philosophical and revolutionary.
Netflix, check it out.
Yeah,
on Netflix.
Right. So, exactly. She documented how the birds were just quiet. They were silent. The birds that she had grown to know, and that was on the eastern shore of Maryland, where she's from. So these persistent toxins were really effective at killing pests for agriculture. And I mean, I knew people who told me, my father's generation said that, you know, they would just put it right on their legs. They would just dust spray it right on them. They'd squirt it on snakes, kill a snake. I mean, the stuff's really effective at killing things, but, what it would do is wash off, end up eventually washing off, and into our water sources, work its way up through the food chain and biomagnify. It was up in the fish, you know, maybe the plants, the small invertebrates, the bigger fish, into the birds that feed off fish, like bald eagles. And what happened was they realized that the eagles' shells, eggshells, were not forming completely. And so mom would sit on the eggs to keep them warm and inadvertently crush them. So they were just unable to reproduce. And the DDT was causing the eggshells to not form. When we finally put all that together and figured it out, the answer was pretty clear. Ban the stuff, and since then the numbers have just recovered. So you give a species a chance, they'll figure it out.
So with DDT and eagles, a success story, but certainly the James River Association continues to work on other pollutants or toxins or issues that have yet to become success stories. So are we talking about agricultural waste? Are we talking about stormwater pollutants? Tell me a tale about something of that type.
Sure. So, where we've put our money, as a state, where we've budgeted to make improvements, we've seen tremendous improvements. Wastewater treatment, and upgrading our wastewater treatment plants, and we've done a great deal with that. Ravana Water and Sewer Authority has done a huge amount with making that happen. And it's not because it paid for itself. We have to pay for it. But we're seeing the results almost immediately in reduced amounts of nitrogen and phosphorus, which are nutrient pollutants, into our water. Where we're not seeing the improvements right now are, and where we need to invest more, we believe, is with agriculture, for one, and then also with our stormwater pollution. So I know Charlottesville recently enacted a stormwater utility in the past year or two now, and it's basically looking at when that water goes down those drains, those storm drains on the side of the road, where does it go? It doesn't just disappear or go to a filtration plant. It goes right into the nearest creek or stream, carrying with it whatever happened to be on the road and may have leaked out of our vehicles and dirt and sediment and those sorts of things. So the result is our urban streams, Meadow Creek, Shinks Branch, you can think of most of the creeks around, oftentimes are just not as healthy as they should be and could be. So there are known technologies, green technologies, to improve that and to filter that water.
Tell me how, because if the water is washing off of the parking lot, and we all know that you don't have to look very far to see a new parking lot or a new building in which involves the parking lot, that you can't have a water treatment plant catching everything that gets washed down the drain, can you?
Sure. You just don't have to build a bricks and mortar water treatment plant. You make a green treatment plant. So we have these raised islands. All of a sudden, I'm looking right outside here out of your studio windows, and I see little islands in the parking lot and with raised curbs around them. But nice trees in there and shrubs and bushes. If you change your thinking about how those little areas can work, you actually sink them. And they accept the water, and the water slowly infiltrates through there and is cleansed and is slowly released rather than shot right down at 100 miles an hour right into a local creek or stream, which will essentially just the velocity and the power, the energy behind all that water, not only is it carrying all those pollutants, but it will wash out, gullify, if you will. It'll make a gully out of a creek or stream by eroding it from the inside out. Slowing that water down, letting it filtrate and become cleansed and slowed down, releasing that energy on site is a great start. There are other green technologies as well that can be implemented. That's a whole growing field of folks that just do that, trying to help
do we have
communities
any,
do that.
Any new places in our area where you can say, that parking lot is what I'm talking about?
Sure. The one that most quickly comes to mind and is very accessible, I know they're all over the place, there are plenty of them, but the Albemarle County Office Building on down in Preston has some real, they even have two or three parking spots, I think, that are pervious. So rather, the water will actually sink down through the parking spaces. That technology is still kind of expensive, so they haven't got the whole parking lot done that way. But they have sunken areas, swales, and rain gardens, essentially great big rain gardens where instead of diverting all that water, the curbs are sunken, and there are trees and plants down in there that will absorb all those pollutants and slow that water down. And they even have a green roof up there. So,
what about the are we getting any assistance from the Architectural Review Board for Charlottesville or Albemarle? Are they requiring or offering any sort of credit to new buildings and businesses who are building their parking lots this way?
I can't speak for Albemarle County directly. I sure hope so. I know many municipalities and localities have adopted these sorts of technologies to be considered before any sort of construction occurs. Whether that's required here or not, I can't say.
Would it be helpful?
Absolutely. I think it should be required, and it should probably certainly start with government buildings. That's the easiest one to control.
Our guest today on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call is Pat Calvert from the James River Association. We're talking about the state of the James River, whether we're standing in the water going tubing or whether you're standing in the parking lot watching the wastewater flow down as it hits the James miles away. 11:24 here on the Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
And back in action on Super Bowl Sunday. Here with Pat Calvert. Pat, are you rooting for cheering for any particular game or any particular team or person later?
I'm an Auburn alumni, or alumnus rather, and got a pull for Cam Newton, my boy.
All right, so back to talking about the James River then. So we won't talk about football. So again, last week we had the guys from Greg Bupert and Will Cleveland from SCLC here, and we chatted briefly about the Brimo power plant. For those who don't know, the basic is that Brimo power plant used coal, and then there's the residue left over from coal, which has been put into a collection pond. What's the proper name for that?
Oh, I don't know if there's a proper name, but it's usually referred to as a coal ash pond.
Coal ash pond. Think of a large swimming pool full of dirty water.
And think of actually bigger than a swimming pool, yeah. a very, very deep one, basically a small lake, Yep.
And now Dominion Power has asked, because they need to get rid of the water in some way, right? It was not lined to prevent it from leaching into the ground. So now they need to clean it up and get rid of it. They've approached the state of Virginia on their plan, and that's not the plan that the James River Association wishes that they would use.
Sort of. Last spring, the Environmental Protection Agency came out with a rule that said, let's close down these ponds, and in doing so, here are the rules you need to follow. Because prior to that, there had never been any sort of formal closure process for closing down these giant, massive ponds filled with millions and billions of gallons of spent coal ash. They're filled with toxic metals, arsenic, mercury, nickel, lots of stuff you don't want to be drinking. Problem is, these are really old. BRIMO was the BRIMO facility on the banks of the James River in Fluvanna County was built in 1931. It's the oldest operating plant of its sort. There weren't really rules back then on how to do this. It was dig a hole. It's clay lined. Well, it happens to be clay soil, so it's clay lined. But there's nothing preventing it from being exposed to groundwater or leakage. And it was built in 1931. Probably older than most of the listeners here right now. But it's great that we're closing these things down. We're getting off dirty coal. Coal is a very polluting energy source, and it's not sustainable. And so it's great that we're getting off of that. And it's great that we're closing these polluting ponds down, but we've got to make certain that they don't just continue to pollute. And that's our concern. Other states we had seen, particularly North Carolina, that we referred to many times in our research, was that every one of these ponds was leaching in North Carolina. Every single one of them was leaching contaminants into groundwater and potentially surface water as well. So we said, well, let's take our time. Let's not rush this. And it's been pretty well rushed because there are some incentives provided for ponds that are shut down pretty soon, quickly. So we're willing to work with Dominion and Department of Environmental Quality in Virginia, who has delegated the authority by the EPA to ensure that these things are closed down cleanly. The first step of cleaning them up is to get the water out of them. And that, you know, that can be done. The technology exists. It's proven. It's known. It's affordable for an organization. Certainly with Dominion, I know that they can afford, and technology to clean this water before they discharge it back into the James. I don't really have a problem with that, as long as it comes out clean, clean enough to protect aquatic life and human health downstream. They amended that permit, fortunately, so it is more stringent, but we're still using the river as a dilution zone.
Explain that.
Okay, so rather the water doesn't necessarily need to come out at the end of the pipe in a way that you and I could drink, but it needs to be protective of human health and aquatic life. I mean, I know there are endangered mussels or mussels that are on the list to become endangered in those waters right there, the Atlantic pigtail mussel, and it's not gonna help it to be exposed to significant levels of arsenic. Other states like North Carolina have done a great deal. We're through this permit, Dominion could still discharge 15 times the amount of arsenic that is required of at least one plant in North Carolina. And to that, and you know, to us, that causes, to James River Association, causes some reason to say, well, don't we deserve as much? Doesn't the James deserve as much as what North Carolina is doing? And I think what we're seeing is some discrepancies that need to be worked out and can be worked out, I believe. The best available technology is there. According to the Clean Water Act, they need to be using the best available technology. I don't know that that's happening. We really don't believe that it is. We believe that it can be improved. These permits can be beefed up. And it's not just this one permit with BRIMO. They'll be shutting down many other plants throughout the state, as well as Appalachian Power has two plants. So we're talking about rivers all over the state that will be affected by this.
But these are, so the rule is enacted by the federal government and then passed on to the state governments to follow through with.
If the state governments wish to have that authority, they can apply, they can ask for it, and EPA can provide it to them.
Which was what, and that was done here.
That is done here. Virginia Department of Environmental Quality has the authority to oversee this. What we see is that the Department of Environmental Quality is claiming that they do not believe they have the authority to require these standards of Dominion. We disagree. We believe that they have explicit authority, and we're working closely with our representation, Southern Environmental Law Center.
You lost me, because the federal, who gave the Department of Environmental Quality, or who gave them that authority? Did they ask for it? Did the federal government just go, in this case, it's you?
No, each state has the right. If they can forego that right and allow the EPA to run their statewide environmental permitting system.
And that did not happen in this instance. Virginia said, we would like the authority.
Yeah, and that's longstanding, and it exists with most states.
So why would they then say, sorry, we don't have that authority?
Well, they believe that they have the authority, but to what degree is where we have some dispute, where we disagree anyway.
How can you not have the authority 100%? I mean, you either have the authority or you don't have the authority. Am I that simplistic as someone not involved in this?
Well, but we kind of agree with you in that that the Clean Water Act, which is the actual legislation that provides that authority to the DEQ, actually also provides the authority for them to manage, for DEQ to determine and to effectively prevent these high prevent the James River from being degraded.
We have the authority, the federal government, or we ask the federal government for authority to watch you empty the pond, empty the lake, but we don't have the authority to tell you exactly how to do it. We're just going to sit here and watch because you have to do it, and we're going to stand here with the authority to make sure it's empty. But we don't have the authority to make sure that you're doing it right. What is that? I have the authority to drive my mother's car, but I don't have the authority to put fuel in it or clean it after I'm done.
So they cannot lower the water quality. There's a part called the anti-degradation rule, and I'm not an attorney, so don't sue me.
That was for the SCLC guys last week.
But they can potentially discharge at an unprotective level in the James if it is necessary for important economic or social development under Virginia's anti-degradation policy. We have no reason to believe that the discharge of elevated levels of heavy metals in the James River is important for economic or social development. So we just don't believe there's a justification for being allowed to do that. We've come a long way in improving the health of our James. Hopewell was a mess not that long ago in our lives, a toxic mess. We don't need to be stepping back, and I'm not suggesting that this would be at that level, but why would we allow our river to be used as a dilution tool for something that can and should be treated more thoroughly before it's discharged into our river with dangerous levels of heavy metals?
All right, so let's get out of the legalese part,
right?
Because I certainly can't answer any of the questions, and you're here as an expert on the other parts of it.
Sure, yeah, and we're just talking about one aspect, really the tip of the iceberg, and that is dewatering. That's getting the water out. But then you got a bunch of dry ash. Still, you got billions of gallons of dry ash laying in these ponds, and that was the reason for us embarking on this, to make certain that these...
All the sediment at the end, after the water's gone.
Yeah, sediment I think of as dirt. This is just, these are the solids. These are the leftovers. In EPA terms, it's coal combustion residuals, or CCR. I like CCRs, Creedence Clearwater Revival, though, so it right. sort of taints that to me. Coal ash, we'll say What are we going to do with this stuff? Are we just going to put a cap on it and leave it in place? Ponds that we know that are leaking and have been known to be leaking for probably decades, and just say, yeah, it's okay, we'll monitor it, we'll just keep checking the water, make certain that it's continuing to leak, and you'll all be okay. We're not happy with that. We don't think that that's satisfactory or protective of the river. The only way to clean these up, and there are many options available to owners of these ponds, is to, but the only cleanup, truly clean cleanup, is to excavate this stuff and move it away from the river into dry lined storage. It's the only way to do it.
How much, I mean, you talked about there being millions and billions of gallons of water. And certainly if you add up all the accumulative plants that we're talking about Brimo, but you said that there are 4 to 6 others.
On the James, there's 9 billion gallons of coal ash along its
banks. How much is allowed to be taken out daily? I mean, we're not talking about putting a garden hose in one end and letting it.
Now we're talking about the dewatering process, right?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
So there were no real limits in the original permit. We got that changed. It looks like that they would be permitted to release up to, make certain I tell you the right number here. I'm not going to say it because I can't remember if it was 10 or 15 million gallons a day the permit would allow, but it looks like they would not be planning to release more than about, I think, fewer than 3 million gallons per day.
Per day?
Per day. 1,500 gallons per minute. And that's based on their treatment ability. Or their treatment capacity with their design. So it can be done, and it can be done a little bit better. It can be done with stricter regulations and allowances, I believe, without undue cost to any of these owners of coal ash ponds. Our issue is not really with the owners of the ponds. I think it's with the law being carried out under the Clean Water Act is not stringent enough to be protective of our river.
1137, Pat Calvert from the James River Association. He's the upper river keeper for the James River. We're talking about different environmental issues. Currently talking about the Brimo power plant and the removal of the, I keep calling it the coal ash
wastewater.
Coal ash wastewater. I got it right that time. So the immediate danger to the wildlife, you mentioned some, did you say Atlantico mussels up there? But if the current permit is allowed, at the with the parameters that are put forth, and we're allowing the release of however many ridiculous gallons per minute, are the fish, are we going to see like dead fish along the river?
I certainly hope not. No, and it is DEQ. I would certainly hope not. But it would. Allowing the river to serve as a way to dilute the pollution means that for a known section of river, you're going to be exceeding water quality standards in the James.
Right. So I have this vision of, this growing gray, bit of water that comes out and starts going slowly down the river, and it's dead fish popping up and grass along the sides turning brown as it goes down until it reaches a point where it's diluted enough that it doesn't do that anymore. But the people who live within a mile or 2 miles or several miles of the out point,
right?
The river is ruined to them for at least a decade, probably.
Well, I don't know. They're looking at 30 days of discharging the water on top of the ponds, and then 270 days, working days, of discharging the water that's down the pore water, which means the water that's kind of mixed in and trapped with the coal ash, which will take a lot more filtering. And it will go through a treatment process, we believe. The permit is not explicit about necessarily to what degree. But we're hopeful that we can get some some management on that to ensure that there will be standards that will prevent them from releasing really, really cloudy water.
How open was this process? I mean, were other than folks who pay attention to the nitpicky bits of information that must be put forth in newspapers, like SCLC and the James River Association, was this, you know, did you have people who live along the James, who live in Bremo, who live downstream, come forth and say, wait a minute, what are you doing?
Yes. Your first part of the question was how open was this process? EPA and I believe Department of Environmental Quality as well as Dominion, I believe, are focused on doing this relatively quickly. There are some incentives to them doing that. Timing is important. I understand that. So is communication with the public. And for folks to understand such a complex new, brand new, spanking new issue in the Commonwealth, it's critical to engage people properly so that they understand and we're not just forcing fear on them. So I don't think that was done very greatly. It also occurred right during the middle of the holidays. The first public hearing was December 14th, January 14th. Think of all the days that go in between there. The decision was made by the State Water Control Board. The room was packed. Remember, this went side by side with another Dominion plant called Possum Point that is also planning to discharge what we consider to be excessive levels of pollutants into Quantico Creek, which leads directly into the Potomac River. People are confused. People are still confused. This kind of went by fast. We asked repeatedly to slow the process down, not just to delay it for the sake of us to prepare a case against it, but to be able to provide meaningful response. We asked for 60 days. We had the backing of elected officials, several elected officials who, some of which wrote letters saying, is there a reason why you can't do this? We were denied that opportunity. Potomac Riverkeeper Network was also denied that opportunity. All of our requests were denied for 60 days. We didn't think that was too much to ask. We really thought that was very reasonable. So clearly, it was very important to the agency, Department of Environmental Quality, to see this happen quickly. So we got together what resources we have, and it really just hit the books and worked with our representation and many others, experts that we rely on, to try and get to the bottom of this. What does this really mean? Because the public doesn't know. Frankly, I don't believe that all of the involved parties really understood it from deep conversations, honest conversations that we had about the issues. It was difficult to communicate, even by the agency to us. So, and it's because it's complex. I don't fault them for that, but I think we need to take the time to make certain that we understand it and then the public understands it before we make such a huge precedent for rivers all over the state and eventually the country. There are lots of these all over the U.S.
You said elected officials in support. Is Governor McAuliffe, what side of this is he on?
I don't believe Governor McAuliffe, I don't believe that we necessarily sought his opinion on this, not that I recall. I believe that we sought particular lawmakers from represented constituencies, communities in the James River watershed. Senator McKeach and I know asked DEQ to delay 60 days. I believe there may have been others.
I asked that because believe Governor McAuliffe has come out on the side of Dominion with the Atlantic Pipeline, et cetera, and allowing them access and putting that forth. Anyway,
I won't touch that one with a 10-foot pole. I know there's lots of speculation out there, but I'm not here to speculate.
11:44 here on the Wake Up Call. 15 minutes left here on 94.7 with our guest today, Pat Calvert from the James River Association.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, heating oil and propane for your home or business, and the award-winning Markets of Tiger Fuel, with 6 area locations.
And back here on Sunday morning wake-up call with our guest, Pat Calvert. FYI, next week is Valentine's Day. Sean McCord will be filling in for me. He's going to have a guest to help with the good, the bad, the troublesome, the I don't know what in the world you're talking about parts of relationships. So listen in next week with Sean McCord. Back with Pat. Pat, it is General Assembly. Virginia General Assembly is in session. Are there specific topics? I read something. I don't know if this is one of them or not. There was poultry waste legislation. I don't know if that falls into this year's category or not. What is going on at the General Assembly that the JRA is into?
Yeah, poultry waste is certainly an issue for a growing part of the state because farmers don't own the chickens typically if they enter into contracts with the biggest companies. They don't really own the houses. They probably have to borrow thousands upon thousands of dollars to build all these things, and then they don't really own the feed, but at the end of the day, they own the poop. That's all they own, literally.
Nice.
And that's the biggest pollutant. So
that's how that works.
There's some problems with that system, but fortunately here in the James, we don't have a whole lot of poultry operations of that magnitude that... Because, frankly, you can grow a whole lot of turkeys and chickens in a very small area, and the only thing you have at the end of the day is the money as they come and get picked up and everything they dropped behind. And what do you do with all that? It's a huge pollution source. Some of that is getting exported all over the watershed now because there's such huge concentrations of it. So we are not engaging on that one yet because really Shenandoah Valley and the Eastern Shore of Virginia are the hotbeds for the poultry industry. And it's not here in the James, though there are some pockets here and there. Prince Edward County has some growing areas. And I know that there are, the industry is targeting other parts of the watershed as well. So we're certainly keeping an eye on intensive confined animal feeding operations, or CAFOs as they're called, concentrated animal feeding operations. But we've largely been looking at other pieces of legislation. I think I maybe gave you a briefer on this one a little earlier, but we want to support farmers. Like we said, agriculture is still one of the biggest sources of pollution. So we need to. Yeah, do you know farmers going into or people going into farming these days?
Well, I know that they've become more like everything else, artisan farmers. You know, some of them are growing their own food for restaurants or they're. I mean, I don't know of any big farmers anymore. They all seem to be trimming in size, or people who are ordering, growing small batches of things.
Right, right. The average age is going up every year. Last I heard, it was around 56, the average age of a farmer in Virginia. So people aren't going into it to get rich. So we need to make it worthwhile for farmers to help meet our water quality needs and their practices.
I would think the ways to help with the waste are not inexpensive.
Most of them are not, but they might be if you own 100 acres of land to fence out your cattle from all that land. Can be pretty expensive and time intensive. And if you don't have a lot of staff working for you, or time yourself, or the resources to install all that and to maintain it over time, that's a significant request. So we're working to ensure that the governor's budget for agriculture management practices is supported with an additional $20 million to meet their water quality needs for this year.
How do you tell a farmer if they're getting older every year, and I'm assuming that's because there aren't any young ones coming into it, is how do you tell a farmer that, sorry, the fact that your cow poops regularly, which is a normal issue, but now you have to do something about it because you can't just let the rain wash it down into the river. I mean, my image is of the farmer going, yeah, well, you know, what do you want me to do about that? That's just what cows do. Cows poop.
Absolutely. Yeah, cows poop. But... There are ways to prevent them from getting into our creeks and streams directly. And those riparian forests, meaning those riverside forested areas and treed areas, do a great job of cleaning that water before it ever runs down off the pasture or off a field. And it stops pollutants like nitrogen phosphorus pollution or bacteria from feces or chemicals. It can do a tremendous job of filtering those out. But we have to make it's got to be education. First, start off with education and engagement of the individual landowners and farmers and producers. And then we have to find out what they need, because their needs vary from farm to farm, from sometimes from acre to acre, because just individual cases. So there are some government programs out there to help them, but oftentimes they're not being many of them are being taken advantage of. We have millions of dollars in backlog for farmers to get assistance to install fencing to get their cows out of creeks and streams, which is one of the biggest causes of pollution. But we need to make certain that we can fund the rest of it. We can't expect them to foot that whole bill, and I believe that we can afford to do that.
You know, I'm thinking of this, and the last time I went tubing over the summer, there was a cow in the water in the James.
Yep.
Which sort of ties me back into there are businesses who make their money on the James River. Certainly, if you live in Charlottesville, you're aware of two of them down on the James with their reeling, rafting, tubing,
running.
Right. I get all both of them in there.
Right.
But if you're downstream from Bremo, are you doing anything to those businesses when that water release comes about?
Well, there aren't any business. It's a very rural area right down there, directly downstream of Bremo, certainly within the 2,000-foot mixing zone or dilution zone.
Before it gets diluted enough.
Before it gets diluted enough, right. Okay. And remember, it was originally 10, I believe it was 10.2 miles long. We got that reduced after the public hearing in December. That's great. That's a huge improvement. It can be zero, and it should be zero by law, we believe. Here's part of what is an issue, as well as last month, Fluvanna County just passed a zoning issue where they would be withdrawing drinking water from an area just downstream of Bremo, I believe 8 miles, 8 or 9 miles, somewhere in that area. And that water will be sent to the Zion Crossroads area of Louisa County. They need that water. Not a lot of drinking water sources up there. And then some of it would be used in Fluvanna County as well. It's been a highly controversial issue in Fluvanna for many reasons. Eminent domain, private property, and otherwise. We think even more so, it's an interbasin transport of water. It's got other issues. You're sending that water out of the James into the York River watershed, so that's a net loss of water. Some of it presumably will remain in the James, but I've not really gotten a straight answer about that from any of the officials. But it's a drinking water source. You're going to be sending that water to people who will be drinking it. There are source water protection requirements in the state of Virginia that would, you know, provide that the water you're pulling out of there cannot be polluted. And I think some, you know, research is going to have to be done and probably proven to the state that whatever water they're planning to be drawing out downstream, up into Fluvanna County, will not be disaffected by or negatively impacted by the discharges that are going to be coming out of Bremo.
No Flint, Michigan here?
I don't believe that this is going to be a Flint, Michigan. They're at least thinking about it. Flint, Michigan somehow, that whoever made that decision really doesn't understand water chemistry. They're asking the right questions, and we have enough of an opportunity to respond appropriately, which is something that apparently did not happen in Flint, Michigan. So I wouldn't compare the two, but it's something that we need to be aware of, certainly.
So back to the agricultural waste, is you talked about how poultry is not really an issue along the James. Cows can be. Are there other things that that people don't think about?
Yeah, I think wastewater plant upgrades. We've done a lot. We need to do more. But you see these things operate, you just figure they're making the water cleaner. They kind of stink most of the time, but presumably they're making the water cleaner. Many of them are still operating on really old technology, decades-old technology, and can be fixed so that what they're releasing is much cleaner than what's going into them and what's currently coming out of them. But that takes money. So the governor's budget has wastewater bonds of $59 million. So we're encouraging that in this General Assembly. And urban water quality initiatives, sort of taking what Charlottesville is doing right now, hopefully replicating that in some form or another in Albemarle County and other localities where urban development, roads, parking lots, rooftops, big boxes are creating lots of runoff because of impervious surfaces. We need to support urban water quality initiatives. And so the governor has set aside $50 million per year for the Stormwater Local Assistance Fund. And we're hoping that and we're pushing hard for that to happen. And most of this is happening through one staff person that we have, Adrian Catula, who's our government affairs and policy manager who works her tail end off this time of year. So I got to give her a shout out.
There you go. Again, this is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Just a few minutes left with our guest today, Pat Calvert from the James River Association. You know, Pat, you were on the old wake up call version 1.0. About a year ago, maybe a little longer than that. And one of the main topics was what was going on with toxic transportation. I mean, we've been talking about BREMO and this toxic coal ash wastewater that's sitting there and how to get rid of that in a safe manner for the river. But when you were on, there had been several months before for those who might remember, is where the train crashed just outside of your offices in Lynchburg, and the river caught on fire there.
Yeah, it sure did. 30,000 gallons of Bakken crude oil spilled
into
the James.
Which you taught me is not really, it's more like gasoline than it is like oil.
It's a light crude, and in the way that it might act, it's certainly more explosive that way, and it also would float versus sink to the bottom. So it's very different from what you would think of in, say, Deepwater Horizon BP oil spill.
Right. It's not what you're going to get in your Pennzoil can.
Well, it might be exactly what you're getting in there. It's just been processed. It's gone through a refinery. You're right. You're correct. It's going to be... It looks similar to it, though. It looks like light oil. I'm not an oil specialist. All I can tell you is that between light oil, light crude, medium crude, and heavy crude, what I was told by most folks who had dealt with oil spills was if you have to choose one to be spilt into your drinking water, your water source, you want light. And it caught fire. So most of it burned off, which isn't great for air quality, but it didn't remain in the water. So we probably dodged a big bullet with that.
Well, just we have like a minute and a half left.
Sure.
So one of the conversations we had was the fact that all this toxic materials, and in this case, the Bakken oil, were being transported, a lot of them along the rivers, because that's where the train tracks go.
And are, yep.
By tankers that were from the 1970s and were not really designed to hold toxic materials.
Right.
Has any of this been changed in the state of Virginia or nationally to help reduce these problems from happening in the future?
I hope so. It's still not very transparent industry and it's difficult to tell. I'll say that. the state corporate commission, state corporation commission, hired one full time at our urging. They did just hire one full time inspector, which is great. So we have one more inspector working the whole state. I think the state of our infrastructure is it's hard to say. The market is driving it right now. So my understanding is that one train of 3 million gallons of oil, of Bakken crude, is going along the James every week to month now versus 4 to 6 that were going every week months ago. There's no guarantee that's going to stay that way, particularly if export bans are lifted for oil. We will probably see that change, but the market will change with as it always does with fossil fuels. It's sort of like a rocket. It goes up and down real fast.
JRAVA.org. Can learn a lot about what's going on in the world about the James River. Pat Calvert here from the James River Association. He's a James River Upper River Keeper. That's a long title for a lot of miles.
Upper James River Keeper, you jerk.
Next week, we'll have Sean McCord here. In 2 weeks, Sean Tubbs will be here from Charlottesville tomorrow to talk about a lot of what's going on in the world and the area about Charlottesville, Route 29, and other topics. Thanks.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.